Support for The Common comes from the law firm of Davis Malm. Whether you're a private business, a public company, a municipality, a nonprofit, or in-house counsel, their business attorneys help achieve your short and long-term goals. DavisMalm.com, DavisMalm.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Today's business leaders are saying that sustainability and diversity metrics are key to the way they do business, but what does that look like in practice? Stick around until the end of this episode to hear more.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. WBUR investigative reporter Willoughby Mariano, welcome to The Common.
Thank you so much. I am so happy to be here.
We are so happy to have you. This is your first appearance on The Common. Are you excited? Are you pumped? How you feeling?
I am totally pumped. I'm brand new to Boston.
Well, speaking of which, let's get into it. Because, Willoughby, you come to Boston from Atlanta.
Oh, yes.
Now, when you were coming up here, when you told people, hey, I'm going to Boston, did anybody tell you about the rats?
No. And here's the thing. Even if they did tell me, it wouldn't have even registered because it's Atlanta. We know from rats, right? It's a city.
Yeah.
And I happen to have done a lot of investigative work on substandard housing. So if there's a rat story, I've heard it. I've probably seen it.
So it prepared you.
Well, no, not for the Boston rats. This is...
Yeah, give us your welcome to Boston rat story.
Oh, gosh. Actually, sort of tied to what we're going to be discussing here today. You know, I learned a lot about rats for a variety of reasons. And I realized that there was a rat burrow just sitting out there in my front yard. And I think it's about like 8 feet wide. Like, you cannot make this up.
Unreal. The rats out in Austin are... It's their town.
It's their town.
Yeah. We're on their turf.
Yeah.
So, Willoughby, let's get into it because the story that you did was you did a piece about how rats are damaging people's cars, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And in this piece, you introduce us to a woman named Candace Smith. Tell us about her.
Candace, she's great. She is a medical school student, and of course, she found damage to her car caused by a rat that could have been very dangerous. And over the course of time, she had realized that her parking lot was crawling with rats. And this was after she had rented a space there for about $150 a month. The rats would not leave her car alone. And so she was constantly looking out the window to see if the rats had swarmed it. And she got so accustomed to the rats, she got to know them so well that she kind of started to name them.
See, one just went inside. There he is. Oh,
that looks like El Diablo.
Oh my God, he was huge.
Yes, El Diablo is the biggest rat that is sort of part of the mix, with the exception of Little Rocky.
Wow. All right. Now, you mentioned car damage. Mm-hmm. What kind of damage are we talking about?
We are talking about all kinds of damage. So Candace had her alternator wires chewed up. We have people with wires to their brakes that have been chewed up. We got headlights, you name it.
And I remember one detail in your story is there was a basketball-sized wad of paper.
Yes. And this is where it gets a little funny, because rats like to snuggle up in cars for warmth. Like, and it's real easy. They can just climb up the wheel well. And they will take whatever they want inside to just, you know, maybe go inside and snack. So wads of paper, let's say you throw out your McDonald's hamburger or something, there's a little left inside, they will take that little bag and bring it up to where they want to hang out. And in this case, it was a car. They put other things in cars, too, that you wouldn't expect.
Like what?
Candace Smith told me about one thing. This rat had great taste in food.
And I would find things like used diapers, a lot of food wrappers, a lot of paper. And then one time, three still attached together ribs from a rack of ribs that they had pulled from the dumpster to come eat in the car.
Listen, I can't blame the rat. Who doesn't like ribs?
That's very true. That's very true. As they say, don't hate the player, hate the game.
How often does this happen in Boston?
It's hard to tell. I actually called up the state insurance office run by the government here in Massachusetts and a couple of other agencies to try to figure out, hey, is there data on rats eating the innards of cars? No. I didn't expect it, but, you know, it was decided no.
How much money does this typically cost?
It can cost as much as $4,000. And unless you have what's called comprehensive insurance, which is the kind that, you know, protects your car if, let's say, you know, it's not in a wreck, but it gets damaged, like a tree falls on it or something. So unless you get that kind of damage, you are kind of forced to just have to pony up the cash yourself.
Damn.
Yeah.
Damn. Did you talk to any mechanics about rats damaging people's cars? Like, what did they have to say?
Oh, yes. I talked to Elias Adad, who is at AZ Auto, which is in Alston. And his car was damaged by rats at one point. He sees these cars come up. And the results of these sort of rat bites car incidents can be a little not so great.
This is where the drive belt is. So you see these pulleys?
Yeah.
See that there?
It's not attached anymore.
It's not attached anymore, exactly. When you lift it up on the bottom part there, there's no nice way to describe it, but there are pieces of the animal that got cut in the pulley. And it's pretty gruesome.
So there's a dead rat just in the car, like in the mechanics of the car. I don't want to say the engine, but...
Yeah, it got caught up, so... At some point, the driver turns on his car. The rat is still inside, munching away, and the rat gets caught up in the pulley, and it kind of ends up awful and gross. I mean, you just fill in with your imagination.
Man.
Not good. That car, it was a really nice Audi sedan, pearly white, and the damage could be as high as $4,000 on that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Willoughby, I feel like this is a good time to take a break.
Okay.
But when we get back, I want to talk about the larger issue of rats in Boston. So we'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. In a recent episode, Series CEO Mindy Luber says sustainability has reached a board level.
Look, if you're an agricultural company and you're not thinking about water risk, you're an apparel company, you're not thinking about risk to your cotton crop around the world, if you are a bank and not thinking about stranded assets of fossil fuels, you're not probably doing your due diligence.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, the Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with WBUR investigative reporter Willoughby Mariano. All right, so we're talking about rats damaging people's cars here in Boston, which leads me to wonder, why are rats such a problem here in the city, in this area for us?
Yeah, well, Boston is a lot like other northeastern cities in that it's got, you know, a lot of density. Mm-hmm. So if you got a lot of apartments, a lot of restaurants all sort of, you know, smashed in together in neighborhoods, the mm-hmm. more trash that people produce, the more rats that you'll have. And the other complication is that since the pandemic, the ways in which we produce trash has changed, right? You know, we're all, or at least we were at the time, you know, when the pandemic started, we all were at our homes, we were producing trash at home. And so the rats followed us. And next thing you know, there are a lot of rats breeding near your house. Also, we got warmer seasons, and that means rats have more time to have rat pups.
Rat pups.
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of things, converging to create this issue. Do we have a sense of whether we're at a point where it's worse or better than previous years? How does the most recent data compare to earlier data?
It is not great, right? So the number of rat complaints to 311, which is, you know, the city complaint line, they soared 75% since 2019. Yes. You know, in the year prior to that, it was even higher. So maybe rat numbers are moderating or rat complaints are moderating, but it's not clear at all.
How do we prevent rats from chewing up our cars and getting into our homes and doing other things? Like, what can we do to address this problem?
Oh, it is all about the trash. Now, I mean, some individual car owners will swear by kind of not really home remedies, but stuff you can get over the counter, like peppermint oil spray, which you just spray on your engine. And my favorite is Irish Spring soap.
Really?
Yeah. You put the bars in your engine compartment, and apparently the rats hate it. I mean, I don't like the smell of Irish Spring, so I kind of get it. You know, me and the rats have something in common there, but no one who is a professional will tell you, hey, that's the most awesome way to do it. What you have to do is just never park your car near a dumpster, which is harder to do than you would think, because like in Boston, that's where your parking lot is for your apartment. You rent a space for $150. It's usually in the lot behind the apartment, and that's exactly where they place the dumpster. And if the dumpster isn't secure, if the apartment management doesn't put a lid on it or doesn't make sure that there are no holes, you're just best parking your car on the street.
Damn. I guess I also had the question, what kind of role do landlords and property owners play in all of this? Because, you know, the trash can is theirs.
Yeah.
It's their responsibility.
You know, I don't buy the trash can.
Yeah.
That's like the real problem here. So if you are a landlord, if you own property, you are required under Massachusetts state statute to keep your trash under wraps. You got to have a waterproof container. You got to be able to close the lid tight. You can't have any holes. I mean, that is literally the law.
Yeah.
And, you know, the city of Boston does enforce this, but oftentimes what you have to do is you have to call that number, 311, get a rat inspector to come over, take a look in order to pressure your landlord to make changes.
Got it. Well, Willoughby, thank you so much for this story, for entertaining us, taking us on a ride. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It really is.
That's WBUR investigative reporter Willoughby Mariano. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. If you have a rat story, hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you tomorrow.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Mindy Luber, CEO of Ceres, a nonprofit dedicated to integrating sustainability into businesses. Here's host Kurt Nickisch.
Are the people who are working with ESG data now at companies, are they in a sustainability department? Does this just become part of general strategy or part of finance? How is that evolution happening with the actual people who are looking and working with the numbers?
So with both companies and investors, the cute idea of social responsibility that was at a manager level or something their foundations dealt with, that's gone. It is very clear based on data, based on facts, based on trends, that integrating sustainability into the core business is crucial. I mean, you cannot have a climate goal that says we're going to get to a net zero by 2040 if every department at the enterprise is not working on that. That's your manufacturing people. It's your supply chain people. So we find that there is often a sustainability team. But they're laying out a plan that involves almost every enterprise, every office, every part of a firm. And that's what we're seeing, because nobody can do the kind of cross-organizational work in one little group. It involves the entire team. It involves HR. Who are you hiring? Is DEI being implemented? How is that working? As it relates to, where do you get your resources? Are there enough natural resources to make your product? What are the auto companies doing now that they've committed to by 2035, there will be no combustion engine vehicles coming off their assembly line for consumer vehicles? So sustainability is no longer a cute, a niche, a part of something off to the side. It is an integral part of almost every major enterprise and every major investor.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.